It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on this, the 26th day of April, 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live, while HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is still deader than Pharaoh's cat. And that's where you go if you'd like to pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump into the chat room and become part of the madcap, multimedia, wild, zany, wacky, real-time extravaganza that is, in fact, the Horn chat room. If you jump in there right now, you'll be met by the likes of Squeaky and VT Blom, who were a little bit early or on time, and other folks who are wandering along at their leisure later on and help to make the chat room the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that it is. You will all, of course, be moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, a spacing guild master. Yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Thursday. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday here on the Horn. And a reminder, this particular edition is truncated, attenuated, shortened. It's a two-hour version of the program is what it boils down to, because at 8 p.m. I will be rebooting everything and turning it around so that at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I can put flint to steel and create the sparks and get the truth seeker campfire up and roaring and going for the next 2 hours. Okay. So that's the logistics for the time being. And I have thanks to send out today. Remember, it's another day of fundraising free radio, which is wonderful. I cherish it. I look forward to it. And I thank everybody who made that happen, including, but not limited to, our subscribers. And so thanks go out today to the partial sponsors of the program who kick in on the 26th day of the month. And those include Michael in Madison. Thank you, Michael. And thank you for being such a friend for such a very long time. And thank you to Melton in California. Thank you, Melton. Thank you for being part of what keeps this all on the air. Thank you very kindly to Patrick in Germany. Thank you, Patrick. I'm so glad that you're on board as well. And thanks to Peter, who jumped in today. And became a new subscriber. Thank you very kindly, Peter. We have met and exceeded, and that is fantastic, met and exceeded Tony and Chico's new subscriber challenge. So thank you very kindly, Peter. And all told, that means that we have no more fundraising to do, not tonight, not tomorrow, and not Monday, because our subscribers take care of about a week's worth of broadcasting. And that is very, very helpful. Almost inexpressibly helpful. except to say that it's expressible because it works out to about a week's worth of funding. So thank you, one and all. Thanks for joining in this evening. Thanks for tuning in. If you tuned in live, if you're tuned in on TuneIn or Stitcher or the White Rose Society stream or the HeadOn.live stream or FYINation.com, thank you for being part of this ongoing little conversation that's been happening for about the last, in one form or another, 14, 15 years. Let's check in on some correspondence before we get the program really up and rolling. Early note coming in for before airtime from Ron in Raleigh. Am I on the right track? Asks Ron. It appears to me that the pumpkin potentate's threats to pull out of the nuclear accord with Iran has one aim. He wants to include ballistic missiles and the ability to rein in Iran's ability to apply regional pressure. It seems to me that Trump and the rest of the chicken hawks want Iran and the other countries in the region to unilaterally disarm while allowing only Israel and Saudi Arabia to maintain their arsenals and the ability to bomb their neighbors into the Stone Age. Since the other countries are busy oppressing their own people, the U.S. will continue to arm them as well. As far as North Korea is concerned, whatever deal or whenever a deal is struck with the regime, we end up breaking the deal. Bill Clinton struck a deal with North Korea over their weapons program, which they complied with. The deal lasted until the Bush administration broke the deal because they didn't think North Korea would continue to comply with the deal in the future. We want to be the only country, along with the other majority white countries, to be able to defend themselves. Am I paranoid, or is this a reasonable assertion? On a more frivolous note, our local NPR station has a film show. Today's topic was overrated movies. The second overrated movie was The Big Lebowski. I thought you might find that interesting. So that was locally produced, was it? I'm guessing it kind of had to have been. But to be fair, I remember when The Big Lebowski came out. Unless I'm mistaken, Siskel and Ebert didn't think too highly of it either. I guess you've just got to be up for the layering and the right. But as to the gravamen of Ron's complaint, namely that, well, we seem to, on the one hand, make deals we're the ones who can't keep. That's rather an unavoidable conclusion. And as to the dynamics of Iran, I have to confess that I've never been able to wrap my head around all that even a little bit. Part of my head. In a region such as that, unless you were able to achieve complete disarmament, all the way from the eastern shores of the Mediterranean to the Indian Ocean, you're gonna have countries with guns pointed at each other. And if countries have guns pointed at each other, they're going to have a basic desire to have bigger guns pointed at each other. And while the fact is that India has most of its nukes pointed at Pakistan and Pakistan has most of its nukes pointed at India, they can be retargeted. And the fact that Iran is near, albeit not dear, to both of those countries, it kind of stands to reason that they would like to have some sort of deterrent to any wild-eyed, bellicose foolishness coming from either of those two countries. And then, as Ron notes, there's Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia has proven itself to be something less than a good faith, proponent of peace in the region. Their propensity for skullduggery and glowing orbs and whatnot proceeds before them. And I mention all of that, Ron's note fits very nicely into what I had for the front end of the program. Being how it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. We have a new Secretary of State. Yes. A religious maniac and bigot was confirmed by the Senate of the United States today with only 42 or 43 Democrats and independents voting against the nomination of Mike Pompeo. I say only, but the fact of the matter is every Secretary of State nominee going back through the modern history of the presidency, and by modern I'm talking about, okay, not modern, but recent, let's use the word recent, has gotten a vote of, 85% or more. And when I say recent, I mean Jimmy freaking Carter. Every Secretary of State nominee going back to the Carter administration has gotten at least 85 senators on board. When Kinda Sleazy Rice, goes great with Kinda Sleazy Chicken, when she became Secretary of State, at least 85 votes in favor. When Madeleine Albright became Secretary of State, at least 85 votes in favor. John Kerry, at least 85 votes in favor. And you can go all the way back to Carter, and that holds true. At least 85% approval by the Senate of the United States because, the position of Secretary of State is among the oldest in the cabinet. Our first Secretary of State was, James Madison, maybe? Yeah, you can check me on that, the original Department of State budget was something like $300. I wouldn't know that, and most people wouldn't. I'm fortunate to know it because, I have learned a great deal from Dr. Bill O'Brien. And Dr. Bill, Dr. Bill can rattle off facts like that without even trying. And the Secretary of State is a position that, since it's the management of the foreign policy of the United States. That requires a tremendous degree of gravity, of seriousness, of business-like demeanor and deportment. It is not the kind of cabinet position one turns over to wild-eyed ideologues. Unfortunately, everything's off the table now. Because all the norms are over. They're gone. Nothing is what it once was. Wild-eyed ideologues are the order of the day. we're going to. So, you wind up with a vote tally of 57-42. And I'm sure that if you were to ask Geezer Disgustus, and it's possible you might ask Geezer Disgustus, more on that later, he'd say it was because the Democrats are poopy heads, definitely poopy heads. Believe me. But, no, that really doesn't... That really doesn't answer the question. Because it is the job of the president doing the nominating of the Secretary of State to present the Senate with someone about whom they can heartily agree to the tune of 85%. But we didn't get that in Mike Pompeo. We got a spook. We got a spy. We got first in his class at West Point. And I'm more and more convinced that that would be the middle school at West Point, Alabama. If I'm going to maintain any regard for the United States Military Academy whatsoever. And I've run the audio on this program. If you are a regular listener to the program, you've heard it. Mike Pompeo is one of your more base manifestations of the American political process. He has a history demonstrated again here of participating in the fringiest of the fringe conspiracy driven elements of the right wing sewer. I mean, for instance, it was 2015, just as a reminder. It was early February of 2015 when the Center for Security Policy, which is more or less run by a bigoted crank named Frank Gaffney, pulled together an ingathering of absolute Looney Tunes anti-Muslim bigots, including the likes of Rick Joyner and Jerry Our God Is Bigger Than Their God Boykin and Diana West and Andy McCarthy and Claire Lopez. And the name of the conference? Now remember, we're talking here about something that was participated in by the now Secretary of State, the Chief Diplomat of the United States of America, the Defeat Jihad Summit. They pulled it together because that one, who at the time was in our White House, the Kenyan Muslim usurper, had organized a summit on violent extremism. And of course, that was anathema to Frank Gaffney and the hardcore, weird, cancerous knot of dead-enders and hard cases who are convinced that creeping Sharia law is going to eventually have us all facing Mecca 10 or 15 times a day, kneeling on rugs and whatnot. Oh, it was quite the to-do. The senator and anointed future king of America, booger eater Rafael Eduardo Cruz, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, he showed up by video. The once and future exorcist of Louisiana, then Governor Piyush Bobby Jindal, turned in a video address. But along the way, there was Steve Cantaloupe's King and Scott Perry. And who else? Well, a then obscure, well, not to right-wing circles, but an obscure congressman by the name of Mike Pompeo of Kansas, who, given any opportunity, will remind anyone who cares to ask, I graduated first in my class at the West Point. And one of the speakers there even went so far that day to bemoan, and frankly, anybody who brings one of these freaks a cold cup of coffee will cause them to start bemoaning political correctness. Maintaining the self-serving the circular logic fallacy that criticizing Islam is proof against political correctness in this country, because in this country you can't criticize Islam because of creeping Sharia law, and that's why they're able to criticize Islam. We buy more land to raise more corn, to feed more hogs, to buy more land, raise more corn, to feed more hogs, with apologies to Carl Sandburg. But Mike Pompeo was there, and he was proud to be there, because for Mike Pompeo, creeping Islamic Sharia jihad is something up with which he will not put. He's hobnobbed around with noted anti-gay bigots like Tony Norman. Yes, Mother Bates. Perkins of the Merkin Family Association. No, he's not. No, that's no. The Family Policy. No. Focus on. No. Splitters. And you know, even Pompeo's buddies acknowledge that he's a bigot. Shortly after the election of Geezer Disgustus, or the selection, by the Electoral College in its failure to do what it was supposed to do, none other than Wayne Allen Root declared his joy at Trump's selection by the Electoral College. And he celebrated, there will be no more people in important positions who are Muslims. And, of course, he specifically referenced Mike Pompeo as head of the CIA. They say Pompeo's problem is he's been negative toward Muslims and Islamic radicals. My God, that makes America great again. Spring. We finally have an administration that can use the word Islam and terrorism in the same sentence, and we're naming people to important positions who have problems with radical Islam instead of people in important positions who are Muslims. So that's our Secretary of State now. And no sooner had several Democrats fallen apart like a house of cards in a blowing wind, a gentle breeze, then he literally walked across the street and got sworn in by a member of the Supreme Court. Yeah, I guess they didn't want to even think about asking Sonia Sotomayor or Elena Kagan or the notorious RBG or... No. And I guess old 30-mile stare John Roberts was maybe looking for his contacts or something, and Slappy Thomas was busy, and the Kennedy guy was probably taking a nap. So he wound up being sworn in by Sammy Bad Breath Alito, which is kind of interesting. Alito said he was proud to offer the oath to Mike Pompeo. Proud because Pompeo and Alito share an Italian heritage. And then, having been sworn in, Pompeo immediately ran off and jetted away to Europe. We had a plane waiting for Pompeo. And he is probably in transit even as we speak. Maybe he's just now landing. Because meetings were scheduled in Brussels at NATO headquarters. Yeah. And I'm sure somewhere along the way, issues of terrorism around the world will be raised. At which point, it's anybody's guess how long it will take before Mike Pompeo starts hooting and hollering like a drunken barn owl about the Muslims and Sharia law. It's catnip to them. They can't help it. And Brother Deacon Asa asks, is creeping Shakira law, no fighting Shakira, is creeping Shakira law anything similar to fanatic religious zealots in one state determining what school children can learn about science in every other state? I'm asking for a friend. And your friend is rightly curious. And no, it's not as long as the zealots in that one particular state are, in fact, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexuals. Okay? Because that would mean that they're Christians and God loves them and wants little children to learn about how Jesus wants everybody to own an AK-47. Clarity says, order of the day? I didn't order no stinking ideologues. Send them back to the Anal Roberts School of Divinity and warmongering, please. Wouldn't I love to? But a simple search of Mike Pompeo and bigotry will yield no small number of results. And remember, it's not just the Muslims. It's to gays. It was back on September 30th, 2014, that Tony Norman, yes, Mother Bates Perkins of the Family Research Council, interviewed Mike Pompeo on his little radio show, and it's all tax-free, hallelujah. Called Washington Watch. Yeah, he interviewed Mike Pompeo about the shocking, horrifying, and terrifying consequences of gay people in the United States. Wait for it. Having all the same constitutional rights as straight people. Mm-hmm. The horror. The horror. Now, bear in mind, and in fact, those consequences, according to Tony Norman, yes, Mother Bates Perkins, those consequences he predicted that they would be deadly in nature. Deadly. Deadly consequences. There's a recording. You can find it. There's all kinds of recordings to show what a maniac Mike Pompeo is. But maybe, he was right about those deadly consequences. He was just wrong about who the consequences would be for. And there are consequences that don't just happen in the United States because gay people can get married. One of the most punished, one of the most put upon, one of the most discriminated against minorities in the world today is gay people. And we have no reason whatsoever to think that that Mike Pompeo will use the influence and dignity of the Secretary of State's office to speak up for them. For instance, a story out of Queensland, Australia. And a 25-year-old guy who was out having fun with his sister, Bradley Skinner, was having some pizza at Domino's in Queensland. Not exactly sure where in Queensland. I mean, it's an entire state there. On the Australian continent. And he was, that's what he was doing. He was sitting there eating a slice of pizza and happened to be gay. That's when a man walked past him and said, "Faggot." Interviewed, Bradley Skinner said, this guy walked past, we were all laughing and having a good time, about to go home. And he called me a faggot. And Bradley Skinner just let it slide, but his sister stood up. I said, "What the hell?" I just ignore it because I'm used to that stuff, and, you know, that's troubling all by itself. But my sister doesn't take too kindly to it, so she just got up and said, "What the hell?" And that's when the man attacked them both. He hit her in the face. And then he pulled out a chain, and started lashing Bradley Skinner with it. When he hit me on the head, that's when I blacked out. I remember trying to vomit, and I think someone tried to put me on my side. I remember the Ambos shining a light in my eyes. That's when I started coming to. I couldn't open my eyes, but I could hear everything that was going on. And his sister couldn't pull the attacker off of her brother. His sister said he just kept hitting him until he was knocked out. I tried to rip him away from my brother, but it didn't work. I thought he was dead. He was just laying there. There was blood coming out of his head. It was horrible to see your brother laying there. And they're waiting to find out if Bradley Skinner has brain damage. Not that Mike Pompeo would care. And if the Australian government, by some miracle, would try to engage in some sort of international diplomacy that would result in less violence to gay people the world over, yeah, Mike Pompeo's probably not going to jump, on behalf of the United States, not going to jump in that regard. I will happily confess that I am wrong should he ever actually do something along those lines. But don't expect it. Back to the confirmation vote. Again, the lowest margin of approval of any Secretary of State in the modern era at 57%. When it was all said and done, the vote total was 57 to 42. Only one senator, John McCain, not voting because he is too ill to vote. The Associated Press describes him as hard charging. I guess that's a new euphemism for virulently bigoted. Or incapable of controlling his inside voice or his inner monologue. You're probably asking yourself, 42, I thought we had more Democratic senators than that. You would be correct. Because several Democratic senators collapsed. Several Democratic senators told their constituents in their respective states that they signed on with bigotry, religious bigotry, bigotry based upon sexual orientation. They signed on with that because, well, by golly, they were convinced that their constituents signed on with that. Oh, by the way, I have committed an error. Mike Pompeo is not the Secretary of State nominee to receive the fewest votes of approval. That low record was established by Rexxon Tillerson, formerly the CEO of the most powerful corporation on Earth, who was then reduced to being berated by a guy who used to sell meat through the mail. That line's never going to go away. He got 56 votes. Everybody else, at least 85, all the way back to the Carter administration. So, who was it? Who caved? Well, among other things, among other people, Angus King of Maine caved. He's an independent, of course. Bernie, the other independent, didn't cave. As she had announced last week, Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, allegedly a Democrat, and God, wouldn't it be fun if once in a while she actually voted with the Democrats, she caved. Joe Donnelly of Indiana, another one of those people who profess to be a D and vote like an R most of the time, he caved. Yeah. There was a A good bit of spelunking going on. Yeah, that's another word for caving, spelunking. And of course, I would be remiss, severely remiss, if I didn't note that my senior senator, God almighty, the times we live in, my senior senator, Joe Manchin, he caved too. And famously and notoriously, over on the other side of the aisle, man of tissue paper, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, well, he caved. The excuse given for all of the Democrats who caved is that they come from conservative-leaning states and they're up for re-election. Now, as an excuse, I guess if it's what you got, it's what you play with. But it's basically an admission of pandering. Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, Joe Manchin in West Virginia. Joe Donnelly in Talibandiana. What they were each saying, not just to their own constituencies, but to the nation writ large, is that they are more interested in maintaining their personal access to power than doing the right thing. How can you figure this out? Well, it changed the dynamics a little bit of the equation. Let's say that there was a Secretary of State nominee who had a history of vituperative invective against Roman Catholics, which Joe Manchin is one. Granted, he's not much interested in the teachings of the head of his faith, but, you know, Joe's got a long history of touting his Catholicness. And if Joe Manchin was considering a Secretary of State nominee who had a history of going on the radio and talking about violent Roman Catholic extremists like, you know, Bill Donahue and his followers who once ran an artist completely out of New York City and terrified him with death threats, you know, all for making a statue out of chocolate of Jesus, maybe with well, he didn't, because he didn't have a loincloth on, and that meant that the sacred schmeckel, the sacred chocolate schmeckel, was on display for all to see. And Bill Donahue and the people that he motivates went absolutely hog wild. And threatened to murder the artist in question, or chocolatier, if that is the more appropriate term. Well, if Joe Manchin said, well, he's the president's nominee, so I'm going to vote for him. The president has a right to his nominees. And that's that. You know, that's the way the people in my... I'm just representing the people of West Virginia. You wouldn't have any problem saying that Joe Manchin voted for an anti-Catholic bigot. The problem is, Joe Manchin would never vote for an anti-Catholic bigot, but because his constituents in this state where I live are largely anti-Muslim bigots, he was happy to take the cover he could get. Mm-hmm. So, his vote was as much a confession about the way he perceives his constituents as it was a confession about how he himself views the world. And there's no way you can say, gosh, oh, golly gee, I had no idea he was a religious bigot, and I had no idea that he was a homophobic jerk. No, Joe just made the simple calculation that there aren't that many people who don't hate Muslims in West Virginia, and there aren't that many people who don't hate gay people in West Virginia, so he voted their interests. He cast a vote today for bigotry. And it was, secondarily, it was a vote cast out of fear, because he's scared to death of Donald J. Trump and Addison McConnell, whose thug name is Mitch. So Joe Manchin told us a lot about what he thinks of West Virginia today with his vote. He thinks we're as bigoted as he is. And that's one of those moments where this is a problem for me. If there was a real, live, honest-to-goodness, progressive alternative to Joe Manchin in the primary, I would probably vote for that person. There is not. Unfortunately, where the West Virginia primary coming up a week from Tuesday is concerned, there's Joe Manchin in the primary, and there's a publicity stunt. And that sort of leaves me out in the cold, so I'll go and vote, and I'll just leave that part of the ballot blank. And then I'll come around to November. And like I've said, if the margin between him and whichever maggot booger eater is running against him is under, you know, say 10 percentage points, I might have to just tamp down my gorge and go and vote for Joe for the first time in a very long time. Because my politics is of the real variety. I cannot put... it'll matter. It will matter if we can get a Senate majority and at least slow some of this madness down. Slow it down enough that maybe the damage can be kept to a minimum between now and January the 20th, 2021. Notes coming in from... Scott and Punky. Regarding turning things over to wild-eyed ideologues, that's the way it is in Trumplandia, says Scott and Punky. Scott Pruitt's head of the EPA, despite the fact that his LinkedIn page still describes him as a leading advocate against the EPA's activist agenda. You can count off the whole list of names in Trump's cabinet or those otherwise in charge of important posts, and each one is a through-the-goddamn-looking-glass occupant of that office. And don't forget those bullshit predictions of no-go zones everywhere in regard to anti-Islamic bigotry. Those were the places so overrun with radical Muslims, they were operating under Sharia law in cities and towns across America and in Europe, in France, and in England. I think that whole controversy arose from a simple misreading of signs. Those were BOGO posters, buy one, get one, in shop windows at Muslim entrepreneurs. Not no-go, BOGO. Scott and Punky noting this just in, it's been revealed that Pompeo was sworn in on Dick Nixon's trick Bible. All the pages are blank because the Lord knows you're just kidding. Jim, not too terribly far from here, says simply, "Hell, Bob, I wrote you in on an absentee." Don't do that, Jim. Don't do that. Um, And here's a little bit of news. Kin, but not in, well, there's a relationship. Today, Ron says, the Memorial for Peace and Justice opened. I don't think there was a representative from the Trump regime present. Haven't heard that any of these non-racists have showed up at the African-American Museum at the Smithsonian either. Well, and why would they? They've already got a black friend, so that's enough. In case you didn't know, the National Memorial for Peace and Justice is the nation's first memorial dedicated to the legacy of enslaved black people, people terrorized by lynching, African Americans humiliated by racial segregation and Jim Crow, and people of color burdened with contemporary presumptions of guilt and police violence. And no. At the 6-acre site, sorry. No Republicans. Yeah. Bill in Allentown, subject line, anti-Catholic bigotry. Way back in 1960, there was ACB going on due to the help of Fred Koch and the organization he started to try to convince people that Kennedy was going to let the Pope run the country. That's true. It's not that far in the distant past. And oddly enough, West Virginia was the place that proved that Kennedy was electable when he won the Democratic primary here. Because if the bigoted hillbillies would vote for a Catholic, then that meant the whole rest of the country could, too. God almighty. But, you know, there are limits. The bigots would say that, well, you know, they may worship Mary and all those other saints and everything, but at least they know a little bit about Jesus. Nothing profound here, says Steve in New York. Serious question, though. How much more can we take? Just when I feel some hope of reining this asswipe in, Mike Pompeo. Well, look, it was going to take a concerted, unified effort. There was going to have to be at least 50 votes. That way, the best that Mike Pence could do would come in and make it 50-50. That meant that Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, would actually have had to have stuck to his guns. And principles are not something for which you're ever going to find Rand Paul being an avatar for. No. So it was a long shot. But there are also stand up and be counted moments. And Joe Manchin, for instance, stood up today and said, count me among the bigots. If you vote for a bigot, well, he said he wasn't going to be bigoted and that he wasn't really bigoted. And, I read the transcripts and I heard the audio and saw the video of all the bigoted things he said. But he told us and he shook our hands and he reminded us that he was first in his class at West Point. And that's the kind of guy that we need to be Secretary of State. Fuck me running. And so whether your senator is Heidi Heitkamp or Joe Donnelly, Joe Manchin or Angus King, or others, what you know is that they think there is political hay to be made by standing with bigots. And of course, the little evangelicals are just hopping up and down with one hand down their pants because they've got one of their own in one of the very highest cabinet positions in the country. I mean, they were pretty stoked when he was the head torturer over at CIA, but this is something else entirely. I mean, Secretary of State, that means that he can help to spread the gospel throughout all the lands. Yeah, Stephen New York noting, Catholics also worship the wafer god, remember? Oh, yeah. Magic crackers and all of that. And God only knows what'll happen to him when he sits down to actually start negotiating with people who are, you know, smart. I suspect that he will walk out of the room with no socks and no shirt declaring victory. Well, that's absolutely true, Brother Deacon Asa. Voting for the lesser of two evils is still evil, Bob. I know. And I'm sure that that little third party in this state that couldn't elect a dog catcher will have someone, and I'm willing to predict that I know who that someone will be, on the ballot come November to pull away just enough votes from Joe Manchin by little lesser of two evils voters who can then say, you know, at least we got a real Republican. And it's going to be funny as fuck when the Democrats manage to take 49 seats and we get a Republican, say, maybe Don Blankenship. Or somebody worse, Evan Jenkins or Patrick Morrissey, that guy from New Jersey, West Virginia. And that would have been enough, you know, there were 50 seats, 50, and it would have been enough to give us a majority in the Senate, only the people of West Virginia fucked the rest of the country. Well, that's true, too. Ron in Raleigh says, subject line, West Point. Hey, Bob, West Point is not Starfleet Academy, obligatory Star Trek reference. Remember all of those awards that Captain Kirk got for diplomacy? Oh, yes. And one hates to even consider what Joe Manchin would do with the Kobayashi Maru. Faced with the Kobayashi Maru scenario, Joe would order a deep scan to see if there was a nearby deep space coal barge passing by that he could hitch a ride on. That's embarrassing. I'll be sending a little message out to Senator Joe just to remind him that he needs every Democratic vote he can get and then some. And that some of us don't take kindly to him assuming that we're all bigots and voting for anti-Muslim, anti-gay bigots as Secretary of State. Jesus, that's sickening. Just disgusting. So that's the filibobster. And we'll take a little break. It is Thursday, of course. And a reminder, this is uh, a truncated version of the program. We'll be knocking off at 8 p.m. so I can get everything ready to do the Malloy broadcast. If you've got something you'd like to talk about, well, we welcome callers one and all. And, of course, the only people who aren't welcome here are right-wingers, wingnuts, birchers, deathers, tenthers, baggers, ninthers, booger-eaters, trumpansies, maggots. Y'all have enough. You just go play somewhere else, okay? But other than that, the line is open and the conversation is fine. 304-574-8178 is the number. Toll free, 844-843-4676. And by the way, I've had communication from Kathy Malloy that Mike came through his surgery just fine, and that the doctor said everything went well, and now he's recovering and about to enjoy a couple of days in a presumably hazy drug-induced fog. Not unlike being in a staffer at the White House with Dr. Ronnie just around the corner. Well, I'd almost say that you caught me there, Marty, but you didn't. BS, you're only knocking off early because you want to watch the first few picks of tonight's NFL draft. It'll probably be Baker Mayfield, so, you know, who cares? Yeah, but no, the Green News Report's on the way, but if you want to get involved in some conversation, jump in. And Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, no charge. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. And we will be back, I'm not going anywhere, but yeah, we're taking a break. Hey, it's a dedication going out to Mike Pompeo and his bosom buddy, Joe Manchin, only from all of us here at the Horn. It's Thursday, April 26, 2018.
Today is a red letter day. It's a banner day.
EPA chief launches sweeping overhaul restricting EPA's use of science.
Let us face it. There is no planet B.
French President Macron criticizes Trump's inaction on climate change. The vast majority of Americans prefer renewable energy to fossil fuels. Plus, global warming has transformed the Great Barrier Reef, potentially forever.
All of those forever transformations and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I would argue that's the most useless, ineffective holiday since Arbor Day. And I'm sorry, Arbor Day, but your secretary's day for trees, and we all need to accept that.
Happy Arbor Day. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I'm afraid Arbor Day really is like Secretary's Day for trees. Looking it up on my calendar, it's not even listed. It was hard to figure out when the hell is Arbor Day.
But you did anyway. Yeah. Hooray for trees.
Happy Arbor Day.
Well, first up, we have embattled Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt, who this week proposed a sweeping new rule that would severely limit the types of scientific studies that the EPA can use in developing regulations. Pruitt's deceptive transparency rule would actually restrict the agency to only using studies where the underlying data is public. Now, while that sounds logical, in practice, it would conveniently block the EPA from relying on studies that use confidential patient medical records, the kind that have been used in landmark studies linking pollution and pesticide exposure to harmful health impacts.
Well, that's convenient for him, isn't it?
It is. In an interview with the broadcast, Mother Jones environment reporter Rebecca Lieber said that the rule could permanently weaken the EPA's ability to protect public health.
The EPA, if this rule goes forward and isn't stopped in courts, then they could look at this limited pool of studies and potentially to roll back these standards further and say that's what the science supports.
However, the proposed rule has a special loophole that allows the EPA to rely on industry-funded studies.
There is a generous carve-out for industry in this rule that essentially lets Pruitt personally to decide what gets exempted from this new requirement.
Oh. Did you get that? EPA Chief Pruitt can personally exempt certain studies as long as they're from industry. The proposed rule docket is now open for a 30-day public comment period at regulations.gov.
What is it?
Regulations.gov.
Got it.
Meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron in the U.S. for an official state visit contrasted his day of hugs and handshakes and backslaps with Donald Trump with a pointed address to a joint session of Congress in which he was highly critical of Trump's policies, including Trump's vow to withdraw from the global Paris Climate Agreement.
I believe in building a better future for our children, which requires offering them a planet that is still habitable in 25 years. Let us face it, there is no planet B. Let us work together in order to make our planet great again and create new jobs and new opportunities. And I'm sure one day the United States will come back and join the Paris Agreement. And I'm sure we can work together to fulfill with you the ambitions of the Global Compact on the environment.
Well, after a day of hugs and kisses with Donald Trump, it's good to hear Macron tell Congress what's really on his mind.
Meanwhile, the impacts of climate change are transforming Australia's Great Barrier Reef. Coral reef scientists warn in a new survey that the world's most famous coral reef could be in irreversible decline after repeated bleaching events caused by surging ocean heat temperatures. Since 2016, several coral bleaching events in a row have killed off approximately half of the Great Barrier Reef, and increasing temperatures and ocean acidification are also killing other corals around the planet. Finally, a recent Gallup survey has found that in contrast to President Trump's policies, the vast majority of Americans continue to prioritize environmental protection, energy conservation, and developing renewable energy over increasing conventional fossil fuel energy production. Only 21% of Americans in the survey favored increasing oil, gas, and coal versus 60% who said the reverse. The survey found that 73% of Americans said they wanted the U.S. to focus on conservation and developing wind and solar energy more than they wanted to focus on producing more fossil fuels.
And where did you get the idea that this administration has any interest in what the American people think?
Good point.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Happy Arbor Day.
I talk to the trees, but they don't listen to me. I talk to the stars. But they,
you know, that's some real bumper genius there from Brad and Desi. Arbor Day and using Clint Eastwood singing I Talk to the Trees from Paint Your Wagon. That's some genius. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, it is. 12 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. From the Department of, well, that didn't take long. If you are not aware, and why wouldn't you be? Now, if you're not aware, Geezer Disgustus called in to Fox and Friends this morning. He's a fan, you know. So he called in there. Apparently it wasn't scheduled. No booker had set it up. He was just sitting there during executive time and he was all worked up because his pick, Dr. Ronnie, had withdrawn his name as nominee to head the VA after a scurrilous after revelation of no small number of scurrilous antics on the part of Admiral Dr. Ronnie, which he absolutely denied, and then withdrew his nomination so no one would actually go digging around and find out that it was true. You know, things like banging on a woman's door, dead drunk, and banging on a woman's door in the middle of the night, early morning hours, while on an international trip in a hotel, and his behavior becoming so bizarre that the Secret Service had to intervene because they were afraid he was actually going to wake up the President of the United States. That wasn't true. Or the story about him getting drunk and wrecking a car. That wasn't true either. No, that wasn't. No, of course not. How could that be? Or the fact that, you know, he was known to folks there in the White House as the Candyman. And what's the name of the drug? The drug of choice was modafinil. Modafinil. And that's known, if you look it up, that's sometimes referred to as the smart drug, which might explain, might explain a lot. But it's something speed-like, but not speed. It also, if you look up its side effects, you will find that it not only has perky qualities of making your, you know, making you more alert and intellectually snappier, it will also serve to increase a certain amount of sexual arousal. Yeah, I wish I was kidding. I'm not kidding. So here's where here's just a little soupçon of what went down this morning as Captain Queeg got hold of the two steel balls and sat and sat talking on the phone to Brian Kilmeade and Steve Ducey and some blonde lady whose name I don't know because I can't keep up. Well, I hate it when this happens. Come on. Oh, this is just weird. Oh, well. I guess it's not. I guess we're not. It's not going to cooperate. But the bottom line is that he was right. Perky Trump was today, this morning, in about the 7 o'clock hour. Yeah, real perky, to the point that he was talking so fast, you might be forgiven if you thought that maybe he had had several cups of very, very, very strong coffee. And he railed, it was a veritable laundry list of things that piss off Donald Trump. And somewhere, his many multifarious lawyers were going, oh, shit, really? Who let him do this? Oh, my God, who let him do this? Did the check clear? Yeah, okay, I guess I'm still on the hook. He said at one point, for instance, and I feel like probably I need to go and maybe have my brain bleached or something, but he said he wanted to get rid of the Electoral College, and that's one of the few things Donald Trump has ever said that I agree with. It's long past time, considering that the idea was first broached, I think, by Andrew Jackson. It and the limitation on presidential, the term limits on the presidency are the two single most anti-democratic aspects of structural governance contained in the Constitution of the United States. Brother Deacon Asa, by the way, going back to Dr. Candyman, says, while all the allegations against Dr. Candyman are credible, I wouldn't castigate him for being plastered out of his mind at work. You can't possibly function inside of this fucked-up White House without the use of some variety of mind-altering substances. And you and I, Brother Deacon Asa, are not going to go round and round on that one because I heartily agree. You're going to have some help. This is one of those moments when you say, "God, gosh, Dr. Thompson, why did you have to kill yourself?" Because he would be, he'd be awfully handy here. And wouldn't Hunter S. Thompson have had a field day with Dr. Ronnie? Just imagine. But anyway, so he went, John Teaster. John Teaster's the one that did that to Dr. Ronnie, and I'll just say that he has a price to pay. You know, more mob talk from the president. And the bit about the Electoral College. And then there was the business about how at some point he was just going to have to take over the Department of Justice.
He said that. He really, really, no kidding, said that at some point in time he's probably going to have to take over the Department of Justice. Now, he can't do that, nor can he. So far, we've seen that he can do anything he wants to. But the biggest part of it, or the biggest, most important moment, was when he when he took Michael. You know, tell Michael I always liked him. It was only business, and then chucked him right under the bus. And said that Michael really didn't handle that much of his legal work. It took about 2 hours for lawyers in the Southern District of New York, in the U.S. Attorney's Office, about 2 hours before they took advantage of the things, the statements against interest, that's a legal term, that Donald Trump made on the air, screaming into the phone. And I mean, he was just barreling through. And poor Ducey and Kilmeade and whoever the blonde is just sat there looking like they were standing in an elevator that somebody had just farted in, you know, really loud and smelly. You know that look. You, propriety says you don't talk about it, but holy shit. And like I said, about 2 hours after, lawyers for the government, lawyers for the Southern District of New York, were arguing in front of Kimba Wood that the president himself supported their position relative to the documents that had been seized by the FBI, to wit, that they were not privileged documents, because, among other things, he said that he didn't have any business at all with Michael Cohen, and Michael Cohen only handled a tiny, 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 itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, microscopic fraction of the Trump business. The way the lawyers for the government put it in the Southern District of New York, in a footnote, footnote 3, as a matter of fact, as the court is aware, after originally stating that the government seized, quote, thousands, if not millions, unquote, of pages of privileged documents, Cohen subsequently identified 3 current clients. Of those 3 clients, one, Sean Hannity, has since said that, quote, Michael Cohen has never represented me in any matter. I never retained him, received an invoice, or paid legal fees, unquote. Another, President Trump, reportedly said on cable television this morning that Cohen, quote, performs, quote, a tiny, tiny little fraction, unquote, of his overall legal work. These statements by 2 of Cohen's 3 identified clients suggest that the seized materials are unlikely to contain voluminous privileged documents, further supporting the importance of efficiency here. Because they are in rather of a hurry to get their hands. There was talk of a special master, someone who would go through the documents and sort out what was privileged and what wasn't. But it's looking more and more like there's probably not a lot of privileged documents in there. Oh, and by the way, Marcus Aurelius also declared this morning, but Michael did handle that Stormy Daniels, that crazy Stormy Daniels thing for me. And that was one of those art of word-knowing moments. The President of the United States is capable of committing slander. And arguably referring to someone as crazy is defamatory speech. And on live television this morning, Donald J. Trump referred to Stephanie Clifford, who's that's her real name, not Stormy Daniels, but he referred to her as crazy. He called her crazy. I have one can't be sure. Maybe it would just be gilding the lily. But one wonders if, perchance, lawyer Michael Avenatti will be amending his pleadings to include a defamation count for calling her crazy on national TV. And all of this because the Cantaloupe Caligula ostensibly called in as a birthday gift to Melania. Because, see, today was Melanoma's birthday. Or 29th or something. And I got her a beautiful card, a big, beautiful card. Fabulous, believe me. Maybe I didn't get her so much. Yeah. He is a lawyer's fucking nightmare. And Trump's lawyers have been in court in the Southern District of New York arguing that he needs to have almost plenary power to screen the documents that were seized to protect himself because he's president and because Michael Cohen was his lawyer. Is his lawyer. We don't really know. And yet, this morning, Donald Trump decided to help the lawyers there in the Southern District for New York, the prosecutors, that is, the people who aren't on his side, by saying that there's probably, there's probably not a lot of privileged material there. And going back to what Brother Deacon Asa said a few minutes ago about not being able to work in that White House sober. It's hard to imagine that Trump's legal team at this point in time hasn't graduated downward to the screw-top Johnny Bootlegger. No more of that 300-year-old Courvoisier, Napoleon, 10,000. No. They're drinking the Johnny Bootlegger through a straw because you, as a lawyer, you cannot represent, it's impossible. And eventually, when he gets around to suing his own lawyers for malpractice, their lawyers through the insurance companies are gonna say, look, nobody could represent him. You cannot represent an uncooperative client. You cannot represent a client who will not take your advice and who will not shut the fuck up! Because that's the epicenter of lawyering and clienting. If you're going to hire somebody to speak for you, you stop speaking. But he can't, because he's so sure that he's so much smarter than all of his lawyers. I mean, he's seen every episode of Matlock and Perry Mason reruns twice. Two hours it took those lawyers to slap him in the face with his own words like it was a rotting mackerel. No kidding. Okay, let's run over and check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. I would like to thank, and note I'm using air quotes around the word thank, whoever came up with the designation the Candyman for Dr. Ronnie Jackson. Is that his name? Yeah. God, I thought never again would that song ever come into my head. But with all the talk of the Candyman, I've got Sammy Davis dancing and singing all over my cranium. Sorry.
Same thing happened to me.
Yeah. And Your description, I think, doesn't quite capture it. You said Trump was a fan of Fox and Friends in the morning. No. Au contraire, mein frère. to say that he was merely a fan. See, what happens is you don't know the full dynamic.
No, I don't.
Of what goes on. He sits there in front of his big flat screen, and one of the three stooges, not to insult Mo, Larry, and Curly, but one of the three stooges on Fox and Friends kind of half whispers, "Donald, why don't you pass the time by playing a little solitaire?" So he whips out the deck and flips around until the Queen of Diamonds shows up, and then the connection is made, and he's on the show with them.
For those not keeping track, that's a Manchurian Candidate reference.
Oh yes, and it seems to be becoming more relevant with each passing day, with Trump's apologists and minions out there. You know, ask any one of them, and they'll stand up and in a loud, steady voice, they'll say, "Donald Trump is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life." To a person, they'll do that with a glazed look in their eye.
Well, and on top of it all, about an hour and 15 minutes ago,
yeah,
he got back on the Twitters again.
God, would someone kindly do us all a solid and break
and
his
well, no,
thumbs.
I mean, we know that Dan Scavino does a lot of it, yeah. And those are the words. Those are the Twitter words that actually bear some relation to reality and have more than two syllables.
Yeah.
But when you see one like this, you know it's straight from the thumbs of Donald J. Trump. "Loved being on at Fox and Friends this morning. Great show." An hour and 15 minutes ago, when it started blowing up in his face less than 2 hours after he was on the air. "I love being on Fox and Friends. Great show."
Well, he doesn't know the first rule of holes. Isn't that what it's called?
Yes, when you're in one, stop shoveling.
Yeah, yeah. Let me shut the door. I thought the guy with the leaf blower and the thing out front for the lawn was gone, but I hear him coming, so let me shut the door again. Jeez. Why does he pick a cold day to do that instead of a nice day?
It's cold in San Diego?
No. He needs to do it on a cold day and not a bright, sunny, mild day.
Well, then he would have had to do it back in February.
Yeah, that's true. What the hell was I going to tell you? Oh, yeah, this whole thing with Trump is just... Have you ever known? I know.
Just take a breath. Breathe. Letting go now. Letting everything go. Yes.
Let me take a sip of my old cheapo coffee. Wait a minute. Maybe that'll help. Wait a minute.
Is this coffee freeze-dried? It's very good.
Yeah, but I added water to it. I choke on it unless I do. You can't just eat spoons of it out of the jar.
No, I've heard that's not good for you.
Yeah. But, I've gotten to the point where my stutter is coming back, my stammer is coming back, and I'm not usually one...
Does every old DJ have one of those? Because I do.
I didn't have so much that. I had a traditional Virginia accent, which is kind of Canadian.
With the ooze and hoos and
yeah,
a boot?
House and mouse and about.
Hoos and moose, yeah, and boot?
Yeah. And also, I don't know where we got it in our family, but the letters UH after words like butter or sugar.
Oh, can't pronounce my R's and G's when I'm speaking Southernese?
Right. My mother was a big one for put a little butter on that. you know, and hand me the sugar.
Sugar, I understand what you're talking about. Absolutely. That's just Southern English.
Well, and the other night I was looking at C-SPAN.
And it shares that in common, by the way, with New England and the Northeast, the inability to pronounce pronounce an R.
Yeah.
Although in the South it becomes a breathy and soft, whereas you know in New England, chada, ah.
Yeah, well, President Kennedy.
I will now get emails from the New England contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation.
Well, President Kennedy was always talking about, I will pursue this with great vigor.
And pack the car and have it yard.
With great vigor.
Right.
But no, I very, very rarely am I at a loss for words or stammering and stuttering. But I'm telling you, it's like a relentless onslaught of asshattery and nut bucketry with these people. And we're only like a year and a half into it. It's just like, you know, Rod Serling couldn't come up, you know, with a storyline like this. You know, I just wish he would stop. I was talking to my older brother last night, or night before last, and I was saying, really, the only thing that we'll have going for us will be if nature and the rules of dietary abuses take their course in the grand scheme of things. I don't know if you saw my thing about the Kentucky Fried Chicken and Trump on Facebook.
No, I didn't.
Okay, look for that. But he consumes about a third of his weight daily in KFC, Trump does. But sooner or later, all the Big Macs and the KFC will combine with arteries and issues and his heart will attack him. And never mind what Dr. Ronnie Jackson says. You were mentioning some of the attributes of this medicine that he was handing out, and you mentioned one of them was rapid speech or compressed speech or something. If you recall that press conference that the good doctor gave
he was flamed to the gills.
Oh, he was like a 33 and a third record going at 78.
Well, if you watch him, I noticed last night, Agnes and I were watching some video of him, and I saw some classic speed behavior in him because it was clear there was nothing in his mouth, but every so often that empty mouth, he would. It's like he's chewing imaginary gum that isn't there.
Now, is this Trump or Dr. Jackson?
No, this is Dr. Happy.
Okay.
By the way, Clarity says, Rod Serling, hell, we're at Margaret Atwood as nonfiction.
Yeah. You're telling me. And it was so easily avoidable. I don't mean to revisit 2016, but people, next time we invite you to do something smart, well, by God, do it. Get off your sparkle fart unicorn and do it.
Oh, this is completely off topic, but you being an old radio guy, you'll get a kick out of this. Are you aware of the spat between Howard Stern and Carl Castle of NPR?
Well, it's probably over because Carl died the other day.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. He had been having issues with Alzheimer's, which kind of led to his retirement a few years ago.
Well, that makes sense. Okay, you see things, and sometimes I don't check the date stamp.
But
I didn't realize that.
issue would I mean, even Stern, what possible issue could he have with Carl Castle?
Basically, there was a vote, I guess this was years ago now, but it just popped up in my feed, and it looked like it was current, and well, I apologize for not knowing Carl Castle was dead. Maybe it popped up because he had died. Maybe that was why it showed up in the
feed. Yeah, a lot of times they'll read, if a name is...
But Stern got real shitty when Carl Castle was nominated, and Stern was nominated for membership in the Radio Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And Stern got shitty about it, but it was one of the more delightful moments when Castle and maybe this is his legacy after an entire career of broadcasting. His legacy is one of having burnt Howard Stern to the ground.
Oh, good.
Stern said that, you know, Carl Castle was nobody. And in turn, Carl Castle, back then, responded. Now that I know that this is horribly, horribly dated, it's not nearly, but, okay, here it is. I assume that, yeah. This is Castle.
Who's Carl Castle?
He has been on national public radio, I believe.
What a career! You're kidding. He got himself all the way to National Public Radio? What a lucky duck. Wow. Give it to him. He's way more successful in this business than he's got to be. He's on NPR. Isn't that a national terrestrial thing?
My dear Mr. Stein, I wrote this response because I wanted to be sure that I said the right things. My understanding is that you're featured on a satellite information service available in some brands of cars, on which you host a show about gynecology. While I am sure this is a useful service for medical professionals, like all of us in radio, you aspire to something greater. Best of luck to you.
Mr. Stein.
That's great.
You host a program about gynecology.
That's beautiful. That's classy. Yet effective.
And he returned the favor, you know, everybody knew he was Carl Castle. Howard Stern knew he was Carl Castle, so
yeah.
He changed it to Cassell, you know, because that's almost Cosell. And, oh, well, it would have been funnier if it was current, but I didn't realize Carl Castle had died.
I'll tell you this.
My condolences to those who loved him and his family.
I'll tell you this about Carl Castle and Howard Stern. Carl Castle was popular and well-respected and listened to in the D.C. area long before Stern, you know, got out of high school. I remember when he used to do, this is in my hometown in the late 60s, WPIK, he was on in the morning doing news, and then after the station went country in the late 60s, he went over to WAVA, WAVA, AM and FM, which was one of the first all-news stations in the country on an AM signal and an FM signal. And then after WAVA, the stations were sold in the late 70s, early 80s, I believe was when he got hooked up with NPR. And I never met him, was never lucky enough to cross paths with him, but I know people who knew him and worked with him, and to a person, they say he was a stellar human being and an incredibly well-rounded, effective broadcaster. So, and Stein can, you know, Stern, now he's got me doing it. Stern can sit on his pile of satellite money and rant and rave all he wants. But, you know, pantheon of radio greats, there's going to be a place for Carl Castle, and I would say it will be well above that of Howard Stern. If only, I mean, let's face it. I know that we disagree on this, but I was a big fan of Don Imus. Okay, and he retired last month. You could hear his show online, and I will miss Imus because, you know, say what you will about his sidekicks, he was a funny, inventive, groundbreaking guy in terms of radio. And they went back and forth back when they were both at WNBC in New York, the flagship NBC radio station. So Imus was in the morning, and Stern had afternoon drive there for a while. Oh, and I'm sure there's clips on YouTube of Stern berating Imus. And I think Imus took the high road rather than to, you know, fling monkey poo at Howard. How weird. So... well, anyway, but I guess that's all I got today. I haven't had enough coffee, so my energy level is low. Plus, I'm worn out by Trump. Jesus, stop him.
Well, the fact that he thinks he did great on Fox and Friends this morning, that means we could have more. For all I know, you know, you and Todd and Steve will stop watching Washington Journal.
Well, see, I'm
or
not
you know, maybe he'll call. I wonder if anybody's told him about Washington Journal. He could maybe call Washington Journal some.
Too crazy for Washington
Pedro
Journal.
Would love that.
Yeah, he... I'm
but
waiting.
But I got to tell you, the looks on those three goofballs' faces this morning, when they were trying to... they knew what he was doing. And they knew he was losing it, and they were trying to get him off the air. Well, that's great, sir. I mean, it happened. I don't have the clip handy. It wouldn't play, goddamn it. But there's this moment where they say, "Well, Mr. President, we sure are glad you called in this morning, but we've heard you've got a million things to do today. Nice talking to you." And he's still ranting away, "Goddamn Mueller, I'll get him to take over the Justice Department. Mommy!"
At any point, did any of them kind of talk out of the side of their mouth, Arnold Day, ixnay on the
ixnay on the Owen K?
Yeah.
No, they were sitting there. They had this look on their faces like cows looking at a new gate.
Yeah, chewing.
They couldn't believe. And at the end, "Oh, and Ainsley, congratulations on your book. I'm sure it's going to, I know it's going to be big." And she's like, "I thank you, sir." And meanwhile, over on that program that I have the filthy little habit of watching in the morning.
Yeah.
I thought it just so happened that they had Michael Avenatti on the set.
Now, he's the lawyer, right?
For Stephanie Clifford.
Yeah, yeah. He was on with Bill Maher the other night.
And I thought he was going to have a baby. Because, you know, lawyering is this kind of a business where, you know, your whole purpose is, and the entire purpose of the structure is to avoid surprises, because you just, you know, when it gets to the jury, both lawyers should know everything that's going to happen at trial. That's your goal.
Yeah. And don't ask questions that you
don't know the
answer
to. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for all the drama that comes across on TV lawyer shows, And you know, the bad guy confessing under the withering examination of Perry Mason or Matlock or whatever, that shit really doesn't happen that often. And yet we've got two examples today. We got Trump and Michael Avenatti sitting there on MSNBC going, it's like when you're young and you get high for the first time and you just lay on your back on the pine straw in the little forest and you hear the sighing of the pines above you in the gentle breeze at night and you just go, fuck. This is beautiful.
Well, see, you must have lived in the country.
And, well, but you know, and you become aware of your third eye, and your mind expands, and you can't believe how beautiful it all is. Well, that was Michael Avenatti over on MSNBC this morning going, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Somebody up there likes me. They really, really like me.
Well, I didn't see it, but I imagine he had a look on his face like a kid, and it's Christmas, Easter, Hanukkah, and Halloween all wrapped up into one. You know, in terms of candy and goodies.
And then late in the afternoon, you get the ending to a Scooby-Doo episode with Bill Cosby in court in Pennsylvania. He gets convicted on three counts that could send him up for 10 years apiece, which would mean that if he serves if the sentences are imposed consecutively, he will get out when he's 110.
Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah, you took it away. You got there before I could. I'm a pervy. You take the Jell-O pudding pop and you put the little roofie in it and you give her the Jell-O pudding pop. There's going to be a million of those for a while now.
Well, let me
just to finish up. So at the close of the trial, after the verdict and everything, the assistant, the prosecutor stands up and says, Your Honor, I move that bond be immediately revoked for the defendant and he be remanded to the custody of the Department of Corrections pending sentencing. Which is, you know, it's kind of a dick move, but you know what? It's the thing, it's the kind of thing the prosecutor would say if it was some poor schlub who had a public defender and could barely defend himself against a similar charge.
No.
So it wasn't like he was singling out Cosby. And Cosby jumps up and says, I'm sick and tired of this asshole. if he'd stood up and said, and I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for those meddling kids.
Jeez.
And it's pathetic.
Well, and I'll close on this. Just getting back to Trump and his antics on Fox and Friends and all that. As an old magician, okay, used to do magic as a kid, some of my happiest memories were taking the bus over to D.C. to the magic shop at 12th and Pennsylvania, and I had a newspaper route, and I would spend some of my earnings on magic tricks, and I got to be fairly good at it. But in magic, there's two things that you learn as a budding young magician. Sleight of hand, obviously, and misdirection. So I've got to think on some level, all of these tweets and appearances on right-wing media are nothing but efforts at least misdirection on the part of Trump. Because if you can get us talking about all the bullshit, okay, if our attention is focused on that, then we don't see what the magician is actually doing with his other hand, which is all the other shit that we try to pay attention to.
Yeah, but if that, no offense, Scott, but if that's the case, he's doing it really bad. Because he took a laser pointer and pointed it right at the stuff that he doesn't want us thinking about this morning.
Well, okay, yeah. But that you have to chalk up to the spirochetes and to some subliminal or unconscious thing in his makeup where he's known for quite a while now, a year and a half in, that this is not the work for him, okay? And he's looking for an out. I really think that he is. And if he can do it in such a way that it doesn't make him look bad or make him bad or wrong, he'll jump at that chance.
Well, we've got an explanation here, courtesy of Fab, our buddy Fab,
okay.
who makes the program possible through the Fab machine. The Trump interview, it was the LSD he got on his fingers when he rubbed Macron's lapel. Those French are a real riot. They knew Rump couldn't help himself. About 17 seconds later, kapoof, and it hasn't worn off yet. Oh, this. Yeah. The walls are breathing, Melania. The walls are breathing, believe me. And the skies have turned to paisley. Fabulous, beautiful paisley. Wow.
At any point did he say, I'm melting?
No, but the walls are.
I don't know whether it was you or a caller.
Oh, wait a minute. I got it. That's a cowbell for our buddy Fab.
I don't know whether it was you or a caller or somebody writing in mentioned a bad experience with lysergic acid.
Well, I've had one. I'm sure sooner or later you do enough of it, you're going to have one.
Where you literally thought you were melting?
No, the potted fern was burning up in front of me. And as the leaves burned away with an invisible flame, they sort of the actual stems of the fronds extended down and turned into snakes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, that was not good.
No, I exited the room before they could get to me.
And then
I walked out into the night where the columns of the old burnt down university building that were still standing began to sway and do a sort of hypnotic little dance.
Ooh, I actually did think that I was turning into a big candle made of wax. And I kind of set it aside after that because I figured, well, my third eye has just had too much.
Brother Deacon Asa says, I completely agree with Scott's assessment. Trump's looking to GTFO while saving face. That's get the fuck out. On the other hand, you're getting a little pushback about Imus.
Well, I figured I would, but, you know.
Howard Stern and Don Imus, Ron and Raleigh says, are both jagoffs. I won't forget the nappy-headed hose remark. And Larry echoed similar. Imus was also a homophobe, a bigot, and a chauvinist. At least Stern never pretended to be the fucker that he is, or pretended not to be.
Well, I would, too, in fairness, and I believe in fairness, there is a clip on YouTube and runs about either 12 or 18 minutes. And I believe it's listed first Imus show. And I believe it's his first radio show on WABC. And he goes into that. He makes it absolutely clear what happened and what responsibility he took. And how he had like a three-hour meeting with that basketball team and the coach and the parents and was taken to the woodshed. Say what you will about him. My experience of him as a
go this far. We have Joe Scarborough in the morning because of Don Imus fucking up.
Well, we do. And I remember when they did tryouts. A lot of people tried out for that gig.
Oh, yeah. I have to share with you, Bill in Allentown says, Washington Journal, damn, Bob, don't poke the bear. I can't stand Joe and Mika. And if Trump, the implication being that if Trump shows up on Washington Journal, Bill will have to watch. Well, you'll be down to SpongeBob sooner. That's where I go, that or Sports Center. Occasionally, that hour of the morning, there are some Three Stooges reruns on, and frankly, there's a lot more dignity in those than there is in the current presidency. Clarence, meanwhile, says, "I've come to the conclusion that Trump is a certified idiot." But here's a thing to think about just before on the way out the door. Clarity just sort of brought clarity to it for me. No, Bob, Trump's still buzzing from his bromance with Frenchie. Melania has his balls in a vice. Now, remember, the whole thing starts out as, well, this is my birthday gift to Melania calling you guys. Is it possible that Melanoma looked at him and said, darling, you don't like this job. Why don't you find a way to get out of it, and we can be happy in our gilded, tacky palace at the top of Trump Tower? And so he goes on and gives anybody who's paying attention a real good reason to 25th Amendment his ass. What does he got to do? Actually repeat the lines from Captain Queeg?
Well, he needs to grab his BBs out of that extremely small vice and
They thought I was crazy, but I caught him. I caught him with the strawberries, the fabulous, beautiful strawberries. Believe me.
There was a key to the food locker, and I could have proved it. I could have found it. Oh, God. Love that film. I got to go. You
got
to go.
Yeah, we got to get out of here. I got work to do.
All right, man.
Later, Scott.
See ya.
And thus we come to the conclusion of the program. Time for me to reboot and turn things around and get ready to fire up the Truth Seeker campfire. I'll remind you, if you want to listen, please listen via Progressive Voices. They like the numbers. I like for them to have the numbers. I'll thank each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaged in the program. And I'll thank all of you. You're a significantly smaller number, but you happy few who keep the program on the air, thank you very, very much. You make it possible for everyone to listen. And thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.Live, and the chat room. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And, by the way, the chat room will remain open during the Malloy program if you want to wander by. James in Illinois says, Melanoma as Bela Lugosi. Classic. Thanks. Thanks, James. Always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. About an hour, as a matter of fact, for those listening live. See ya.